This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Gathering accurate numbers and determining the true scope of homelessness is difficult. People are transient, sometimes don't identify as homeless, or may be hidden as the person is couch surfing instead of sleeping on the street. Trying to track subsets like homeless youth or LGBTQ youth homelessness is even more difficult. The Prairie Pride Coalition has partnered with Illinois State University's School of Social Work to study the issue in Bloomington Normal. David Bentlin is the president of the Prairie Pride Coalition board. He says the group has always been interested in youth issues, but youth became a greater priority after a community needs assessment survey ranked youth issues highly. Diane Zosky, director of Illinois State University School of Social Work, managed the student researchers who helped study the issue and prepare the report released earlier this year.
One of the difficult natures of really identifying the problem is homelessness. It's so invisible. You know, there's no counting. There's no record, no identification. So the way we approached it is it would be very difficult to really get an accurate representation of what's happening in Bloomington Normal. So we went to the professional literature. The three students did a comprehensive review of the professional literature in terms of what's the nature of homelessness with LGBTQ youth. What are the situations that are catalysts for these youth finding themselves homeless? What are the concurrent and consequent issues they deal with being on the streets? And then what are some of the services out in best practice communities for how this is addressed? So we looked at the kind of the national professional literature and what's done. And then we looked to partners in Illinois. So we did primary phone survey research with 36 agencies in Illinois who receive federal funding to provide homelessness services for youth. And just asking them what's the scope that they see, and then what types of services are they providing to try to remedy this problem?
So can you, using those studies and, you know, using broad benchmarks, make an educated guess about maybe how many either homeless youth or mm-hmm. LGBTQ mm-hmm. homeless youth are in Bloomington Normal?
Mm-hmm. We don't really have an answer for that. And here's an example of how it's so difficult, even just on a national scale. The estimates can vary. For instance, the U.S. Department of Housing estimates that 53,000 young people might be homeless at any one time. Yet, the National Center on Family Homelessness says that number could actually be as high as 1.6 million. So that's quite a disparate difference, you know, in terms of that. So we don't really have a number on number of homeless youth in Bloomington Normal. But something that's remarkable in terms of all youth that are homeless, we do know that generally about 40% of them identify as LGBTQ. And there's something very particular happening with these young people who find themselves homeless that is different than just homeless youth in general.
And what is that, Dave? What is the particular nature of LGBTQ homelessness among youth?
Well, I think it varies quite often from person to person, but I think there are some patterns. I think that we find that a lot of times LGBTQ youth find themselves in family situations where they're not accepted, where their orientation is not accepted, or their gender identity is not accepted, and family members don't understand. And if they're not thrown out, their financial support is withdrawn from them. They're ostracized. They're not getting any support at home, and that leads them to seek shelter in other places. So there's a number of things that work there, but I think what happens is that family environment, if it's not a positive environment, it really contributes to the tendency for this homelessness issue to increase.
And Diane, there's something you want to add?
And if I could extend on what Dave's saying, and you're absolutely right, Dave, and something that I'd like to point out for our listeners is we look for youth that are put out of their home or perhaps run away from their house. Oftentimes, family discord is at the base of that. But what Dave's talking about is a whole different element in terms of LGBTQ youth. It's not just family discord. It is family rejection, which is quite a bit more damaging to young people and traumatic for young people in terms of family rejection. And here's just a couple of data. The Human Rights Campaign, which is the largest advocacy organization for LGBTQ people, on a survey that they did, 63% of LGBT youth reported that they anticipate they would have to leave when their families when they came out to their families, 63%, so they would anticipate that. But Ryan, Caitlin Ryan, who does a lot of study in terms of LGBT homeless youth with her Family Acceptance Project, reports that 30% of families actually did reject their child, and their child was at least temporarily, if not permanently, removed from their home because of their outright rejection, not being able to accept them as a gay, bisexual, transgender youth.
So what you're saying is that a highly chaotic or fractured home can lead to homelessness, but right. That's different than saying, I don't want you.
Absolutely. Very different. And when you think about when a parent says to a child, I don't want you, and it's because of a very personalized nature in terms of your sexual orientation or gender identity, that cuts to the core. That's a core rejection that is very hard to overcome.
And I guess another issue with trying to get at some real numbers here is that the homeless youth may not identify their gender identity or their sexual orientation. Dave?
Well, yeah, I think that's true. And sort of to follow up on something that Diane said about not being sure of the local numbers, the height of the problem that we have here locally with LGBTQ youth who are homeless. I'm a member of a LGBTQ student support fund at ISU, and we receive applications from students who are oftentimes in a situation where they're either the threat of being homeless, or they are homeless, and they're doing things like couch surfing, and they're really reaching out to us for some financial support to help get them back on their feet and at least to get them through their college studies. So there are some anecdotal stories like that we're aware of this happening in the community.
And we'll hear from one of those students a little later in the program. Dave, how many applications do you receive?
Well, it's been interesting. There was a period of time, I'd say probably 5 years, where we didn't get much of any applicants at all. And I would say in the past 2 years, we've gotten 3 or 4 applicants a year. And the stories have been very heart-wrenching. It's amazing to me. And I think part of the issue might be the fact that students, in some sense, are feeling more comfortable in coming out. And then they have that comfort in coming out, but then they run into a wall of not getting that family acceptance, and then that leads to things like homelessness and non-support from the family, and it puts them in that situation. And I think that might be part of what's causing this rise in applicants.
Or maybe the word's getting out in the right circles that mm-hmm. support exists.
Yes, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy in the studio with David Bentland, president of the Prairie Pride Coalition, and Diane Zosky, director of ISU's School of Social Work. Once on the street, what do LGBTQ homeless youth face that may be different than other homeless people or other homeless kids might encounter?
Yeah, and that's a good question, Mike, to really think about what life on the street is like in terms of the existence. For all kids who are on the street, any youth who's homeless, there's high rate of risk for violence. I think that risk goes up exponentially when we're talking about LGBTQ youth. Part of that has to do with
Tied to their sexual orientation.
Being tied to their sexual, it's through maybe through exploitation. It may also be through means for survival in terms of survival sex. But youth are put in a very precarious position in terms of danger. Risk for things that we take for granted, malnutrition, the food insecurities, medical care out in the street. And we're talking about a whole continuum of medical care, certainly acute medical care, but even things like we've heard of young people who being on the street and moving a lot and very precarious, they lost their glasses. What are you going to do for vision care? Dental care. I mean, the whole range of continuum of services. Mental health care is one area that of great need for these young people. Rates of depression are quite high. The suicide rate for LGBTQ youth, and particularly for homeless youth, is quite a bit higher than other youth. Trauma-informed services are really necessary for these young kids. In addition to family discord, many homeless youth, and not just LGBT, but many homeless youth also find themselves homeless because of child abuse, physical, sexual neglect, circumstances at home. So the rates of trauma on these young people are really quite high. So a real need for mental health services. Now, I would say all of these services in terms of our LGBTQ youth, housing, of course, housing, medical services, mental health services, has to be done in a context that is affirming in terms of their sexual orientation and gender identity. If not, it actually can do more harm and damage.
How does foster care factor into all of this? When kids turn 18, what happens? And how does that, does being a gay or lesbian factor into that?
Right. When kids turn 18, they typically will age out of the foster care system. There are some provisions in Illinois with the Department of Children and Family Services to continue to provide services for young people past the age of 18. It's usually when they're involved in the university. And we have a group of those types of students here at ISU, Youth in College, they're called. But oftentimes the support ages out at 18. Now, you think about when you were 18, any of you listeners, when you were 18, were you ready to be self-sufficient, you know? And we are talking particularly about young people that come with a lot of unmet needs, you know, and are no way able to be self-sufficient. Because of their homelessness, their education has probably been disrupted. They have a disrupted employment pattern, so they are in no way capable of supporting themselves.
So some transitional housing would be important.
Absolutely.
You mentioned food insecurity and mental health services. Transitional housing would be on the list, I would guess. Mm-hmm. Just some education on what it's like to live alone, some life skills training.
Yeah.
Dave?
Well, and I wanted to add, too, the Prairie Pride Coalition has been in touch with the Department of Children and Family Services to try to bring to Central Illinois a pilot project that they introduced in Chicago earlier this year. It's a project where they're encouraging same-sex couples to foster and adopt some LGBTQ youth, because what we're finding is that these LGBTQ youth have particular needs that oftentimes can be met by same-sex couples. You know, there's some mentoring possibilities there in addition to offering them a safe environment. So that's another way that we're trying to address this issue locally, to just make things a little better and to address the specific needs of these youth.
So that's one thing, but you're a small organization. You can't take it all on. Where else do you think PPC might be best suited to help?
Well, one other thing that we've done is reach out to some community organizations. The main community organization we've reached out to is Project Oz. They're one of the main pipelines for homeless youth in this community. One of our board members, Gary Gletty, that Diane mentioned earlier, has been in touch with them and worked with them. And they are aware of the problem. And they've also been working with the ISU Pride organization here on campus. And we're a recipient of the proceeds from the charity drag show that took place last spring. So, and they used that money to put together a workshop that was held earlier this year. I forget what date it was. But it was a workshop that address this issue. So I think that they are a prime partner, and I think that's where we found we can be the most helpful, is being a collaborative resource with organizations and social service agencies like Project Oz.
And I think this demonstrates some of the difficulty that you have in trying to pin down the numbers. I think Project Oz estimated 20% of the youth in the community were LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. The study you cited said 40%.
Yeah.
So the number is probably somewhere in between there.
And one of the difficulties is some youth are really reluctant to identify. You know, they're not sure if it's safe or not. I wanted to comment on something that Dave said in terms of their work with Prairie Pride Coalition's work with reaching out to Project Oz and with Illinois DCFS. And we often think about providing services for the young people, and that's certainly necessary. And one of the other avenues that I've talked to Dave about is also working with the bio families, with the parents. If there is any possibility of reunification, and sometimes, and we know that, Caitlin Ryan's research has shown that of the 30% of kids who are put out of their home, many of them are able to be reunified with their family. And we know that if people from the LGBT community can work with parents and really educate them about what the future holds for their young person, and really good role models in our community, we know that can provide a service, because if there is a possibility of a healthy reunification for that child back with their family, that's the best outcome for that youth.
Diane, can you tell me what the student researchers got out of this project? What did they learn?
I think Dave experienced this when we met with the executive committee and shared our results. They could see the enthusiasm for the young people, and just the delight in really discovering what is often considered a hidden problem. You know, a lot of people just don't realize the magnitude, the scope, and really the problems that these young people face. Each of our three students, they also have a particular interest in the youth population. They work in child welfare situations, that sort of thing. One is a school social work major. The other one is works in child welfare, and the other one works for Heartland Head Start. So they work with young people. So they really got a lot out of this experience.
I just wanted to follow up on the reunification perspective that Diane mentioned. One of the things that we talked about was trying to get our local chapter of PFLAG involved in this, too, because a lot of times if a child is in crisis, if they're in a family situation where the parents are not understanding or accepting of them, we hope that PFLAG can be used as a resource, that they can go to PFLAG and the leaders of that organization can maybe reach out to these parents and family members and kind of help them along the way and help them toward a route toward acceptance to kind of keep that family unit together and to make it a little bit easier for that youth.
Okay, Dave, Diane, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.